ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We've got all kinds of stuff to get into today. Todd McShay dropped his mock draft after the Senior Bowl. We'll see where he's got different things slotted there. OU got another moral victory last night. Do those count to get them in the tournament? Don't know. Sooners aren't a tournament team historically. But they might be because the state of college basketball, some of the conferences that are normally pretty good aren't going to get very many bids. So Oklahoma losing to Texas last night, we'll talk about that. Leedy Bison boys head coach Lance Carpenter is going to stop by here in about 10 minutes at 9:15. We'll talk about his season, kind of a roller coaster year for the Bison, a little bit out of character for them, but it is finishing on a high note as they roll into the regional tournament coming up tomorrow evening. There's weather possible, how that can mess with stuff, we'll talk about. And then the Thunder at the All-Star break. Tonight's the last pre-All-Star break game. That'll be 58 games. So it's not really the halfway point of the season. So 58 of the 82 in the books. Currently with 18 wins, we'll talk about how many wins will be too many for them once the season is over. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of that, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in, 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, stay in touch with us two ways, KADSAM.com or the Paragon app. Download that app with all the high school basketball. You've got it there with Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight, thepennynews.com. We got radio stations as well. Skinny on Sports podcast back in effect. KADSAM.com or iTunes if you missed the show entirely. Jared, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Weather possible. I know the further north you go, the more chance of winter weather.
Weird weather.
I'm going to have to make you give me a tutorial on how to do the severe weather in case that happens because I haven't done that in so long. As a matter of fact, I've never had to turn the key to do all stations at once.
Well, guess
I've
what?
Never done that.
I've never had to do that either.
You do it from your house, don't you? Not to give away trade secrets.
Yeah, I don't wanna, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I haven't done the key thing, which seems fairly simple, but I can show you totally. Which is crazy because I didn't expect to show you on February 16th.
Yeah, that's
it'd be March 16th I'd show you.
That's what it's like, oh, wait a minute. Today's Wednesday. Oh, gosh. What a bad break.
You step outside and it smells like spring, right? Smells, but you know, it has that feeling. We all know what that feeling yeah, is as Okies. Like, yeah, it's probably going to storm tonight.
It's hard to believe it's going to be darn near 80 today, and there could be snow when you wake up in the morning.
It's weird
on the ground.
Totally weird.
So that's that. We'll try to keep you up to date as good as possible tomorrow with how any of the weather might be affecting the high school basketball playoffs because it gets back going with regional tournaments in Class A and Class B tomorrow. So we'll do our best to keep you updated on any kind of postponements or anything that might happen with the impending weather coming down from the north. Tonight, Thunder right here on this air. It'll be the final game of the pre-All-Star break portion of the schedule. It'll be game 58 against San Antonio this evening. Now, that means they've got 24 games left after tonight to reach the 82-game mark. I looked at their schedule. 16 of the 24 after the break are against teams that you would say are in the playoff race. So those are games that the Thunder don't need to win, the other team does. So a clear advantage for the other side. But then so that's two-thirds of the schedule. But then there's the other eight. When you look at the other eight, these are the games that tonight included – our games, Oklahoma City just can't afford to win in the chase for the most ping pong balls for the lottery. So they're currently set with the fourth worst record, only one win behind Indiana, and then they're about four behind Sacramento, San Antonio, and a group there. It's going to be hard to catch those teams, I think, especially, you know, SGA's ankle's been hurt, air quotes, maybe.
Yeah.
But we all saw what happened last year about this time. They just set everybody, and they lost 23 of 25 down the stretch. I don't know if it's going to be quite that deliberate this time. But when you look at those eight games, at Indiana coming out of the All-Star break on Friday, the second game out of the break, that's a team that's one win ahead. You cannot win that game. Then you got Sacramento, San Antonio again, Orlando twice, Portland twice, and Detroit one of the last handful of games. So the current win total for the Oklahoma City Thunder is 18 right now. How many is too many when the season is over?
I think it would be, I mean, clearly eight, right? You mentioned the eight games that are winnable.
Oh, good grief. If they win 26 games, that's massively over.
Right? Yeah, so that's way too many. I'd go with, I'm going to go with five, six, something like that.
So
I mean, I say some this around this, I mean, when you're tanking, some is about three or four. And I could see some wins, especially with guys like Giddy and Mann. And then if SGA comes back, yeah, Dort. It's a good squad. And it's like kind of what we were talking about yesterday. It's such a peculiar position that Dagnall is in, is how do I coach to lose? You know, it's not in anybody's forte. So I think because of the youth and the talent that, yeah, there's going to be about three, four, maybe even five wins there.
I think
the disastrous scenario is you mentioned the eight, that if they go and get eight wins, and then if they go and start winning games they're not supposed to be winning, they have no business winning, they go in there and win.
See, you're right about Dagnall, and we talked about it yesterday. You can't leave it in his hands organizationally. And so if you want to play, I mean, no one wants to see Shea have to miss the last 30 or 40 games again like he did last year down the stretch, right? But when you play him, you have to play him against Milwaukee and against Phoenix. You know what I mean? Against the teams that you're not going to beat anyway. But when it comes to Detroit at home on April 1st, he don't need to be in the lineup. All of a sudden, the plantar fasciitis jumped back up, or
right,
whatever. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yes.
So that's where I think the Thunder have got to be like they did last year, but maybe not to the extreme, but smart about who is available on the nights when they play these eight games. And the fewer, the better. And maybe even bring in, you know, hey, Lindy Waters, you got signed to a two-way contract from Oklahoma State. Why don't you fire out there against Indiana on the road? Second game out of the break. Maybe even start. I just think, because you're right, coaches and players don't know how to tank. When they're out there, they're trying to win. Right. And so you've got to take it out of their hands. You cannot allow them to get involved in a game like the other night against the Knicks, where you look up and, you know, the Knicks didn't play well, aren't very good, and the Thunder young guys got on a roll and won that game. It's cute now, after the All-Star break, every one of those wins against teams you don't need to beat start to get way more important in a negative way. And so I think if they end up with more than 22 wins, which would be four more from now on, that's too many. And the reason I say 22 is because when you look at the standings right now, that's where that would get them into the 6-7-8 range if they start winning more than that, and everybody else just falls apart. But at 22, worst case scenario would be tied for fifth, and that's if, you know, those teams don't win another game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that gives you a four game buffer. It's going to be hard to lose enough for Houston to catch Oklahoma City, but it's possible, and it's only three wins. But will Houston win four more games? I mean, if they win four, Oklahoma City couldn't win another game. You know, that's going to be tough to fall that far with what Houston's firing out there. And then, of course, Orlando and Detroit are so far behind, there's no way. So, and then you take your chances with the lottery. But I think you're right. If they end up winning eight more games from here, go 8-17 down the stretch, that is not good tanking.
Do you know who Rachel Phelps is?
I do.
You do? That's who Clay Bennett needs to be.
Rachel Phelps is the owner from Major League.
Exactly.
I do know. I know exactly who it is. Now, I don't know if the players would get quite as excited about taking off strips of clothing.
Yeah, maybe they shouldn't, because that, then they turned around. That motivated the team. But I'm joking. But, you know, as far as kind of that scenario, you're like, your pinky toe hurts? Let's set you for about 10 games.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Sam, or, you know.
Yeah, and especially against Sacramento at home.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, though, because here's the thing. In the NFL, the way it's structured, you're guaranteed whatever spot you get, right? Even if the Thunder tanked perfectly, even if they didn't win a game all season long, they're not guaranteed anything, because it's still the lottery, and it's still the ping pong balls, and it's still up to chance. You know, last year we were all so excited when they won the coin flip against Cleveland to move up to the fourth spot. Well, guess what? They'd have lost the coin flip. They would end up having the third pick. You know, look who would look pretty good in a Thunder uniform? Evan Mobley. Even though Giddey looks really nice in a Thunder uniform, Evan Mobley would look better.
Right.
And especially with the way the team is constructed and what they need. So it's not foolproof, but you have to give yourself the best opportunity. And to me, if the Thunder win more than like 22 or 23 games at the end of the year, that's going to be too many. And it's going to negate their chances a little bit for getting that generational type talent. We talked about them starting, you know, moving out of the tanking mode with what they've built so far to add that one more piece that could move them to start trying to climb back up the mountain in the Western Conference.
Right.
Pleased to be joined now by the head coach of the Leedy Bison. They've got India Homa coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock in Hammond in the regional tournaments. Lance Carpenter. Lance, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hey, we're doing good, man. I'm going to start with a couple of questions that have been kind of hot-button topics around the state, not necessarily out here, but I want to get your thoughts on three of them. One is a shot clock. Well, what are your thoughts about trying to implement a shot clock in Oklahoma high school basketball?
I think it'll be very difficult to implement one, because you've got to. We have enough problems trying to get people to run the clock and everything like that. And I just think that getting a person there that knows when to reset it and stuff could be very difficult. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, that's going to be somebody that's going to go through some training and stuff like that. And another thing is that I think is making sure the signals with the referees and stuff, knowing it is. I mean, the referees are fighting such a battle, because we're having such a shortage of good referees and stuff out here, and a number of referees to fill games, that I think that's another thing that'll be on the refs, you know, that they have difficulty with.
Yeah, and honestly, to me, the challenges are more than the reward. What exactly is the reward of having a shot clock in high school basketball?
You know, I think the only reward you see is you know, they maybe speeding up the game. Everybody likes a fast-paced, fast-action game, and you know, but I just don't see the benefits of the rewards of it. For some fact is they're just so much more that a school's going to have to put on themselves, and the poor referees, you know, they have enough going on right now to put that on them too. Did the ball hit the rim? Did the ball not? And so then I think that takes away from that point of. There's other things going on during the ball game that the referee needs to be watching, whether or not it's that way. And, you know, and bless us, my feelings go out to the referees. We have a shortage of referees out here, you know, and you know, that's just another thing. You're like, I'm not doing that because of that, you know. Just another thing upon the refs, and I feel sorry for them, you know, to have to do. And plus, upon the schools as well, you know, with the money situation we have out in the schools and stuff nowadays, and the financial situations we have. That's hiring somebody else to do that, because the person running the clock in the books cannot be that person. They have too much going on over there, you know. So I don't see quite the rewards for all the other things that's going to have to go into it to get it there.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Next question that we've started to see some banter about is the ranking system. You know, the coaches rank the teams throughout the state of Oklahoma in all classes. Can that be fixed? And if so, how would that be fixed to make it – to where they just simply try harder, I guess, with the rankings, because they determine what the games are now in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, we have the most logical ranking system at the moment that we could possibly have. Mm-hmm. You know, it's way better than it used to be. I feel like that we might need to go to an area that we need to tweak it just a little bit, as far as go through an average of the points you receive throughout so many weeks. And not tell maybe the coaches exactly how many weeks we're going to, and then your final rankings go with that.
Okay.
Because I think sometimes we get to the point that we want to get a group together to manipulate the system for our benefit only instead of doing things in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so I think there could be some tweaking of that going on as far as it goes over an average, because it's kind of bad you see a team that maybe has been ranked in the top eight all year long, and then all of a sudden they get moved down to number 10 or 11, and somebody else that hadn't been ranked in the top eight all year long gets in just because of the coaches manipulating the system a little bit. You know, we have a lot of great coaches in our area and stuff, and I don't feel like that we do that. I think we do it in the right way. But I know that there's some that happens to. I know it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just because I don't like a team or something like that, if they're a good team, I'm going to rank them. You know, I've been in this business a long time. I'm not going to – that to me, that's just petty stuff there. If you're just out for yourself, I'm going to do what's right and rank the top kids. I mean, top teams and you know, in same way. You know, I just feel like that's the only way that we could – accountability to the system is, I guess, is what I'm saying. Integrity of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I tell all the young guys that, you know, the integrity of the game is when you do that, that's just the integrity of the game. It's not out for yourself. If you don't have one of the best teams, then you need to do what's right and you know, rank them accordingly, you know. So.
Absolutely. And then lastly, in just the last week or so, the OSSAA has announced that what happened last year with the state tournament due to COVID is going to be permanent for this year in the A&B. 5-day state tournament gets everybody into the big house for every game. It seems like everybody enjoyed that last year. What are your thoughts on all the teams in Class A and B getting to play on that floor this year in the state tournament?
I think that is just awesome. You know what I'm saying? The kids, I've been fortunate enough to coach in the big house many times in my career, and, you know, all the kids remember playing in the big house. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I think that's just an awesome situation. We talked about that in the past. He's trying to make that work in the past, and that's been something in the makings for several years. COVID took it to a different level last year, you know, but that has been something that's been in the making for many years. And I, you know, all my players that got to play in the big house or didn't get to play in the big house through all the years have just been one of those things that they always remember playing in the big house on that floor. You know, I can remember as a coach, and it's been many, many years ago, whenever the lights come on for the first time when I was on the floor, they just give you a cold chill, you know. And it's crazy because Sean Wilson was actually interviewing me when that lights come on. And so that's how long it's been, many years ago. But we can both of us went, wow, whenever the lights come on, we were in the finals, and I can remember that. And the lights come on, and I was like, wow, you know. And so, you know, that, like I said, that's been many, many years ago. But that was one of the feelings that you'd never forget. And I think that's great for the players to be able to do that.
Well, Sean Wilson's been around so long, I think he was there the first time the lights came on. He's been there.
That may have been me and Sean. We go all the way back to the coach's corner and at the Flaming O, you know.
Yeah. Well, Coach, let's talk about your season. You're coming in 14-10 right now. You got a nice district win, district championship over Hammond, 53-45. Now you move on to the regional. But first, before we talk about the path forward, let's look back at your season again, 14-10. Tell me about it. It's kind of an up-and-down year, but here as of late, you guys are kind of finding your stride.
You know, a lot of people don't know, and you're talking about the rankings, this hurt us in the rankings. We were really sick. We fought a lot of sickness early and a lot of injuries early, you know. And, I mean, that kind of caught us off guard. I mean, there was nights that I might have 4 or 5 guys gone. And, you know, and that's kind of trying to get everybody in the right groove and get everybody healthy and stuff like that was kind of one of them tough things. So we lost some games early that I felt like we might could have won, but the situation didn't work out the way I wanted it to. And so we just kept building throughout the year. I knew we kind of had a young team, some inexperienced kids and stuff, trying to get everybody in the system right way. And I always felt like as the year went along, we were going to get better. You know, we would just get better and better and better. And finally, after Christmas, we all got back healthy. The injuries took care of themselves. They healed up, and we finally got to kind of playing in stride. And I just felt like, you know, we go to the Oil Center, we start playing better up there, we get the finals up there, then we go down to Altus, win 2 out of 3 games against the bigger schools down there. And I just felt like that we got to play a little bit better and understanding what we needed to do. So I think part of it was early in the season, we'd have lost games maybe we could have won if we'd have been a little healthier and that injury bug hadn't got us. And that hurt us in the rankings, you know, not being ranked the whole time. I don't know how many coaches I've played and said, I can't believe you're not ranked. You know, I cannot believe you're not ranked. I said, well, it is what it is, you know. But if you lose games early in the season like that and stuff, it hurts you in the rankings.
Yeah, to your point, 6-5 before the Christmas break, and then you turned it completely around, 8-5 after that. Was there a point as you're moving through the Oil Center or even down at Altus where you realized to yourself, hey, our guys are getting it, and things are turning around in a positive light for the Bison?
Yeah, you know, there was. There was a point through there that I told my wife, which is very supportive of me, by the way, or she wouldn't let me do this job forever, but I told her, I said, we're starting to understand. You know, I've been this a long time. I understand kids a little bit, and I said, it's starting to click. You know, everybody's starting to understand their role, what we've got to do in order to be successful to win. I said, they're starting to come around. I said, we're going to surprise some people, I think, late, and I feel like that's kind of what we've done. You know, I think we've surprised people late. And they're like, whoa, you know, like I said, when we was at Altus, well, we went to Oil Center and we beat Forgan, which was a good win for us, and everything. And you know, got to play Laverne in the finals, and there's a battle with them, and Laverne's got a really good ball club. And so, you know, it was just one of those things that I felt like we started to understand that a little bit more and more as we went.
Who are some of the guys you mentioned figuring out roles? Tell us about some of the guys on your squad this year and the roles that they play.
You know, one thing that we missed, we lost the last couple, 3 years, I've lost a lot of point guards. And that was an area of concern for me, is somebody to run the team, you know, to get everybody on the same page and stuff and everything. And we struggled with that early. I tried several different guys early, and I finally went back to the kid that had run point guard all the way in junior high that got big on me, and that's Luke Puffenberger. And I just give him the ball back, and I said, okay. I said, we had a sit-down conversation, and I said, Luke, listen, I'm going to move you back to point. And he goes, hey, Coach, I got it, no problem. And I said, okay. I said, well, I didn't really want to have a 6'5 point guard, but, you know, this is what it is. You know, it is what it is. The kid can handle it, and he can look over and pass and stuff like that. And I felt like once we did that, then the other ones that really wasn't point guards but had to play that position, they relaxed a little bit. And so when Luke started doing that for us, I felt like we started getting better. Everybody started understanding their roles, you know what I'm saying? And so that was one of those areas that I felt like was better. And like I said, he is so big, he sees over a lot of people. And he can make those passes to those open guys cut and stuff, and that's been a plus for us. So Luke has been one that's, once he went to the point guard system, I think that's helped us a whole bunch in that area. Clem, Saturday night, hit a ton of free throws for us. Down the stretch, you know, I don't have the book in front of me, but I don't know how many free throws. He had a heck of a game for us. He made a lot of free throws. He's made a lot of progress throughout the year, you know, shooting the ball, handling the ball. He has to run points some. If I move Luke off, he has to run points some. And so that's been a big difference there when it comes to that. To that kid, he, like I said, he's improved so much from the beginning of the year to what he is now. Drake Page is one of the most steady guys that's been with me a long time. I asked Drake to do some jobs that he's my defensive specialist. He shoots threes really good. He can handle the ball as well. But every time we have to man somebody up, Drake always draws the toughest assignment. Him and Peyton Goodall, they trade off whenever we do that. Peyton's another great defensive person, and so Peyton does the same thing as Drake. They're kind of a combo there, and I run one till he gets tired, then I run the other one in. You know, and that's just the way I do them, and they know that. When one gets tired, the other one's got him. And so those two young men have really improved. Their shooting has really improved. They played sparingly last year off and on. They traded out starting off and on last year, and then they've come on and really, really made me hands. And that's kind of, they know if somebody has to be guarded, it's them. You know, it's them that's going to do it. So Drake and Peyton have both done a really good job for me. My post games this year have been Jack Buff. Jack Buff was hurt early. He twisted an ankle early in the season, and he battled that injury the whole time. You know, a 6'4 kid, a strong downer on the post, you miss that kind of kid. You know, just his presence, his rebounding, his putbacks and stuff like that is something we'd missed early. And he finally got healthy after Christmas, and I could tell he's really come on. And here lately, he's kind of taken that role. He's just going to own every board, you know. And that's been a big plus for us whenever he does that, when he just goes and grabs every board. We have a foreign exchange student that's actually starting for me, Pablo Perez. And, you know, he has you know, to start with, he didn't understand quite what it was. He played a lot in Spain. He come from Spain, Pablo did, and he didn't understand exactly everything, but once he figured it out, he's become a really good player for us. He plays inside. He can shoot a little bit from the outside, but he plays inside, so he's really come on and been that person that just I guess, understanding it more and more. The more he's playing here in the United States, the better he's getting, you know. And so he's really come on for me here of late and played better the second half of the season. I have two more kids, and I play eight kids constantly, and I got two more that play a lot. Jace Green. Jace Green is an unbelievable athlete. There's nights that Jace just wows me in the things that he can do because he's such an athlete. He plays, you know, I tell people all the time I kind of have eight starters because I never know who I'm going to play. I play those eight kids constantly. And so Jace is one of those in the rotation there that plays. And, you know, there's nice. Jace has some unbelievable points. He's super athletic, really good on the break and getting out and running the floor for me. He's good at finishing on the other end. He jumps out of the gym. For no bigger than he is, he could just jump out of the gym. And he's another one that's really helped me because he's really come on the second half of the season. And the last kid I have is Christian Kleinsmith. And Christian is one of the more kids. He can handle it. He can play about every spot. He can run point guard for me. He can play a wing for me. He can go defend somebody. He can shoot the three. So he's one of them guys that he has to move around a lot. You know, when he's in the ball game, he has to play different spots. And Christian's had some really good moments where he shot the ball well. He can go score very good. And so it kind of gives me a big combination. I kind of rotate those eight until I find the five that's playing good at the same time together, and I just kind of stick with that.
Man, okay, now that you've given us the full scouting report on your team, tell us about moving forward in the playoffs with Indiahoma. Then on the other side, Tyrone and Forgan. How do you like your chances in this regional?
You know, this regional's tough. Indiahoma is really good. They got three really good players that, I mean, can all score. They played a lot of tough competition throughout the season and stuff and everything. And, I mean, they can really – really, really play. They like to run the floor, put a lot of pressure on you. You know, and it's going to be one of those things that's going to be really tough on us tomorrow night. It really is. I mean, we're going to have to play our A game in order to compete this bunch. They've been ranked all year long, and have been watching a lot of film on them and stuff and everything. And you know, they can all five score. There's three of them that's just really outstanding. The other two are great role players. I mean, not saying they can't get 10 points a night because they can. But, you know, they put a lot of pressure on you. They play, like I said, play a lot of good teams down there. And so it's going to be tough. And then the other side, Tyrone and Forgan. I've already played Forgan. They're a great team. Tyrone, I've played them all summer long. I've seen them every year in the playoffs. I mean, they're just another bunch that's really good. So, I mean, I'm going to talk about the other three. I'm not going to throw myself in there. But those other three teams that are in the winner's side of our regional tournament are really good. Good quality teams. I mean, all three of them are. So, I mean, it could be a dog fight to the end. No telling who could come out on top of this deal, you know, and be the regional champs. Because, I mean, I think it's an open door for anybody as long as everybody comes to play.
Yeah, I know. It almost feels like an area with the quality of the four teams in the winner's side of that regional, and it's still a step away from getting up to Woodward. But Coach, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to the Bison, and congratulations on the up-and-down season that's hitting the high notes as we get into the playoffs.
I appreciate you guys, and take care of old Sean for me, okay? Because, like I said, I know at his age, he's got to be able to – have some help, okay?
Hey, listen, we're just kind of waiting on maybe a little bit of help from you. You might be the only one that can wrangle him in, as it
were. We all had our names on the coach's corner, so everybody had their names, and Sean will give you mine. We all had it, okay?
Yeah, that's Sir Lancelot.
Sir Lancelot, yeah, that was me. So,
Coach, thank you so much. Good luck to the Bison tomorrow night.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Head coach Lance Carpenter of the Leedy Bison. And, you know, that he answered a question that I kind of had for him through right there with, you know, what turned around. Just simply health. And that's, you know, in the COVID age and in the time that we're in.
Sometimes it's as simple as that.
You know, and it just happened to coincide with the Christmas break. And I've always been one of those, a real believer in especially the smaller schools because you get a bigger sample size before Christmas, starting at the 1st of November. You know, you play half your schedule almost before that break, and then that practice time becomes so valuable, and you always see, we see it every single year, there's a couple of teams that maybe you thought, what's wrong with them? And then they come out of the break right into a tournament, and then, you know, like Leedy was, right in the old center finals with a win over Forgan. You're like, okay, there they are. You know, and then you wonder what changed for Leedy. Just guys got to play. You know what I'm saying? I got everybody healthy. So good luck to the Bison and Coach Carpenter coming up tomorrow.
But I think, you know, whatever the record was for Leedy, you and me, like, it's Leedy, and they're going to be right there because of that guy we just talked to.
Correct, 100%. And, you know, and the guys that they have on the team with the, you know, experience that, that even if they're not playing, those kids grew up watching state tournament basketball.
Yeah.
5 straight years before last year that streak was snapped. I mean, even as junior high kids, as elementary kids, that you kind of osmosis gets you into being comfortable in that stage. And you're right. The shocker of all shockers to start the season was to not see Leedy on a Saturday at the 5-county tournament.
Yeah.
You know, and, but obviously circumstances out of the control of that. And now you're back to seeing where we thought that they would be to start the season.
But I would not be shocked if they...
I picked them to go to state tournament, so I ain't going to be shocked about nothing.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to say. I wouldn't be shocked. I know Indiana comes in. Just look at their...
21-4.
Four losses and some quality wins in there. But I wouldn't be shocked if Leedy is able to take care of them. And then all of a sudden we're talking about, I mean, to see what happens between Tyrone and Forgan and who they get. But, I mean, what I'm saying is if they win that game, there's realistically 2 wins away from the state tournament. And I would not be shocked if we find them playing in the Big House.
And that's why that game, we talked about it on Monday. These games are almost the most important ones of the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
Because the difference in winning and losing tomorrow night is so immense as far as getting to the state tournament. You know, you're right. 2 wins away versus 5.
Yeah.
And that's a massive difference.
These games on the winner's bracket on Thursday are huge.
Here's what's crazy. As he talked about that regional, I mean, when we saw it, it was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Tyrone, a state tournament team from last year. Leedy was 5 in a row. And Tyrone kept them out. Forgan was a state tournament team last year. And then Indiahoma is number 7, 21-4. That's a regional. Guess what the regional winner gets?
They would get...
Probably Mountain View.
Mountain View.
Undefeated number 2.
Yeah.
In an area. I mean, that's... Whew. Start looking around at tough regionals. I know we discussed Class A boys and girls for Arapahoe. And the path that they've got for the Leedy Bison... Pretty tough too.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, you had to beat your arch rival in district on their home floor.
But man, they got such an advantage not have to travel very far.
It's true. And they're used to that. You're used to that path too.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Coach Lance Carpenter of the Leedy Bison joining us here this morning. Talk about his season so far and what to look forward to in the regional tournament coming up tomorrow. And Jared, programming note, we got somebody else tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have Canute Trojan head coach Brock Steffes on with us tomorrow. He just gave me the emoji thumbs up that he's good to go.
All right.
So we'll about the same time, 9:15. We'll get him on, talk about the Trojans, and they'll play tomorrow, we think, with the weather. We think they will. It's at Burns Flat, not too hard of a drive. So, and they got Carnegie. So we'll get his thoughts about that game and his season.
Good
so
stuff.
Far. Yeah.
Very good stuff. And listen. We'll have girls coaches, too. It just so happened that the first two we reached out to were on the boys' side. We promise.
Some coaches, and it's not their fault, they just don't want to talk.
Isn't it hard to believe that
they can sure yell on the court, but they don't want to talk on the radio.
Isn't it hard to believe that an uncle can talk as much as Lance just did, and a niece, maybe not so much?
I wonder like if I can, said, they can yell on the court, but they don't want to talk on the radio.
I wonder if I can get you in trouble.
How you might.
How dig a hole I could dig for you over at Canute.
Nah.
Last night, Oklahoma with a golden opportunity to kind of not solidify themselves in the NCAA tournament, but sure take a nice step with another win over a ranked team. They beat Tech last week, which is in the top 10. Had a chance to win in Allen Fieldhouse Saturday for the first time since 1993. Didn't get it done in a close loss. And then, of course, last night had a shot at the end of regulation to win it. Didn't get it done. And then Texas wins 80-78. So Oklahoma, what falls to, what, 14-12, 4-9 in the Big 12, which on any regular year, we're already talking about, okay, you've got a handful of games left in the conference. Then you've got to go to Kansas City. And at Kansas City, you're going to have to get to the finals or win a couple of games. Not the case necessarily this year because around the country, when you look at the bubble, there's just not a lot of teams to fill those spots from the Power 5 conferences. The Pac-12 isn't very good. When you look at Joe Lenardi, he's got four teams from the Pac-12. The ACC is down as well. The American, quite frankly, is down from where they have been in the past. The Big Ten is normally at 8-9. They're at 7. So the Sooners are fortunate in the aspect of the bubble isn't quite as strong as it normally is. But at some point, these moral victories have to turn to wins in order for the Oklahoma to stay into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's just, you're right. It helps that everyone else around the country, it's the quality of basketball is down. And I think that goes to what you just said about, you know, OU is still with a good chance to get in, is the respect that the Big 12 has top to bottom, right? I mean, we've said that since day one. We've been saying it for years. You have to show up every game or you can get a loss. Just look at Tech when they came to Norman. Right, just look at OU when they went to TCU, you know. So, it shows the respect that the league gets. But I wouldn't be shocked if there's Selection Sunday. There's a lot of nervous Sooner fans, and then everyone's relieved that they saw OU up there. But then, you got to turn around playing a playing game on a Tuesday night in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah. So right now, Lenardi, he's got Oklahoma as one of the last four byes, so not in a play-in game.
Okay.
But Iowa State is in the last four in, which is play-in.
Was that after last night?
No, it was yesterday morning.
Okay.
And so you could see those two changing spots, obviously, because Iowa State went down to TCU and won. You mentioned TCU. They're in the tournament. It's not like that was – at the time, it felt like, golly, what are you losing to TCU for?
Right.
And now that's
those
a team
games,
that's in
though,
there.
The way they lost, that they had a chance to
that's
win.
Right.
It's those road games you have to win. If you have a chance to win it, you got to steal those road games. In this league, you have to because they're hard to get.
Yeah, and a win at Kansas is one that nobody else is going to get, and you had a golden opportunity
there. That might
have
been their golden ticket in, you know, if they get that win in Lawrence.
Back-to-back top 10 wins, that puts you in a different category.
Because they got quality wins already.
Yeah, Iowa State.
I don't know if I want to call Florida a quality win now.
Florida's the first four out.
See, but –
And Lenardi actually has Oklahoma playing Arkansas in the tournament.
That'd be fun.
Which is a game that Oklahoma's already won.
That's a quality win that's already won. And won, I don't say handily. They looked like they were in control of that game start to finish, it felt like.
Yeah, some games down the stretch to look forward to for Oklahoma. Obviously, Saturday in Ames. That's for sure to me these two teams, they're literally neck and neck. Oklahoma looks to, depending on how he does this, I don't know if the top team on the last four byes is like number 60 and the other 64 or whatever, you know what I'm saying, or whatever the numbers are. But Oklahoma's at the bottom of the last four byes. Iowa State's at the top of the last four ins. So to me, that means OU is like literally one spot ahead of Iowa State, in my mind, the way he's got this. And so, you know, that's a game that could be for, you know, at least now, are you a play-in or are you in the tournament? And then you look ahead, Kansas State on the road for OU coming down the stretch. They're in the next four out, so they need some wins to try to bump themselves up in the tournament. Is that game? That game could literally be for a spot in the tournament up in Manhattan here, and just later on down the line in the schedule. So, you know, OU, when you look at what they've got left, at Iowa State, at Tech, home to OSU, home to West Virginia, and then at K-State, I believe, is the rest of the schedule. Can't afford to lose to either one of those home games, either to OSU or West Virginia. And it'd probably be nice to pick off two of the three road games. One of the three is a must, I think, to have yourself in a position to where you don't have to do a ton of damage in Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament.
Well, this is, you get that seed. If you're OU, you got the coach that knows how to get an underdog team deep in the playoff, right? So deep in the tournament. So maybe that's what they're trying to do. I don't know. Yeah, just get in. You never know what could happen. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, and this is something we'll talk about after the season's done, you know, grading the year for OU, was it more than what everyone expected? Was it less what we expected? You know, I maybe a tick more because they were picked seventh in the league, which that's where they probably could finish. But were they picked as a tournament team? Some would say yay, some would say nay. And I guess what I'm asking is the future bright for Coach Mosier and the Sooners? I think so, if he could start getting some of his guys in there and running his system. Because he's kind of had to patch this together with, you know, you had Manic go over to North Carolina. Of course, you've had guys go to the NBA, guys leave the program, and he had to go find some guys to patchwork this together to, you know, get what he got. Started good, kind of tapered off. So people have asked me this question over and over, you know, knowing I keep a close eye on it, how do you feel you would look going forward? So I think they got a coach, and just give him time to recruit. It's, you know, in this climate, it's going to be hard to do. But see what guys he can get. And moving forward, I think they'll be all right.
Do you happen to know who's leading the Atlantic Coast Conference, the ACC, in both scoring and assists?
Individually or a team?
Individually.
No.
Alondis Williams, remember him?
Yeah. Yeah. Who's he play for now?
Wake Forest.
Wake Forest.
You know who's fifth in scoring in the ACC?
Brady Manick?
Cam McGusty. Remember him?
Yeah.
At Miami. Brady Manick's doing a good job. I think.
North Carolina's been kind of like a bubble team, too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they're right there, just either ahead or right below OU in the last four byes.
Yeah.
You know who's leading the not anymore. He's fallen to second in the Big East in blocks.
Who's that?
Quirk Keith. Remember him?
Vaguely.
These are all transfers out of Oklahoma after last year.
Right.
Not couple. McGusty's a couple years ago. Everybody else was on the team last year. And so I think it does speak to what you're talking about with Mosier, patchworking it together. He's got to get better players if Oklahoma's going to be what they've been. Because here's the truth. Everyone knows about Oklahoma football. Oklahoma basketball is easily, over the past 40 years, top 15 program in the country, top 20 for damn sure, but probably a top 15 program when you look at the runs of Billy Tubbs to Kelvin, even Capel made an Elite Eight, and then, of course, Kruger. You know, that's three out of four coaches that made the Final Four, one of which, the one that didn't, was an Elite Eight and ran into one of the buzzsaws that we've seen over the past 20 years in college basketball, that 2009 North Carolina team. That with Ty Lawson and all, Lawson and Hansborough and that crew. That was one of the best teams there's been lately. And so, you know, you gotta have better players. And Mosier can only do so much with the limited roster. And he patchworked it together nicely.
That's what I'm saying.
But the truth of it is, Tanner Groves ain't good enough.
No, but that's what I'm saying. He had to get some Band-Aids for this season. To stop the bleeding, make it work, and it has, for more or less. I mean, you're above 500, probably win some games you weren't expected to win. Arkansas comes to mind. You know, maybe even Florida at the time. I don't think anyone gave him a big shot there. But give him time to get his guys that runs his system like he had at Loyola Chicago. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Loyola Chicago. Give him time to – you can't just expect Final Four in the first 2-3 years. I think over time he's going to get his system to work there. And if history proves it, like you mentioned all the coaches, you know, who got those guys on campus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So outside of Kelvin, it's been Joe C. And that's the common denominator there. So, you know, and Joe C., just like the football process, and Joe we trust, I say the same thing for basketball. I think OU basketball is going to be fine. I think the season was as maybe what we expected, maybe a little bit more. We'll see how it ends. Going forward, though, we'll give him time to recruit, Mosier, that is. And I think the future's bright is what I'm saying.
Yeah, just going to have to get better players.
Just going to have to get better players. I think he can do that.
And he's
an electric guy, a magnetic guy, a guy that I think he'll get some players that want to play for him. And then moving forward, I think it's going to be okay.
By the way, sweet crowd, OU fans. Great work.
I didn't watch. I was at basketball practice.
Great work.
I was
work.
Listening a lot on Cool 94.
Really nice. Really nice crowd you had there. What did you get, $5,000? It was ridiculous.
Isn't that the state of college basketball
ridiculous.
Everywhere?
Ridiculous. I mean, bad. Bad, bad. I've got McShay's draft, his mock draft, coming out of the Senior Bowl. We want to, we can hit that for a little bit here. First thing I notice, scrolling down through the list, guess what's missing, Jared?
What's that?
A Big 12 player.
Oh, really?
Not a single Big 12 player is in the first round of Todd McShay's mock draft. We wondered if, you know, Perrion Winfrey might sneak up. I've seen a couple of them. CBS Sports had one that had him like 26th. McShay doesn't have him or anybody else in the Big 12 in the first round of this mock draft. And quite frankly, it makes sense as to why the Big 12 has been shut out of the playoff the last 2 years. And this is just the result coming down the pike of not having a team good enough to be in that college football playoff. And this is the result. You also don't have players necessarily that are good enough to go in the first round in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really add any more to that. That's proof's in the pudding, right? That's what we're seeing here. I wonder who would be the first Big 12 guy to go. Would be Winfrey?
Gosh, without really thinking about who all's out there, probably. You know, him, Benito, or guys that were second, third rounders. I'd have to look at like his rankings to get you a better idea. Let's see if he has those.
No, just to ask the question, is it because there's no Big 12 guys in this early speculation, but is it because a lot of guys haven't declared? Like the guys that were stars, say, on that OSU defense or on that Baylor team, or a lot are sticking around or maybe even transferring out. But is that a reason why?
Yeah, sometimes it is. I don't know if it is this time because a bunch of those guys have entered into the draft. Jalen Petrie might be a guy from Baylor. Speaking of Baylor, he might be the first Big 12 player off the that would be taken. Let's see who he's got ranked highest. He's got Breece Hall 81, so keep that marked. Jeremiah Hall. Oh, no, there's no way he's – oh, that's his score. Never mind. Never mind. Benito is the number 8 outside linebacker. Let's see where he's got Winfrey as defensive tackle. Winfrey, the third best defensive tackle. So it's got to be him as far as the way that McShay's got him ranked. You know who is all over the place in this mock draft?
Who's that?
Who? What teams group would you think? Yeah, I bet they got some first rounders if you just look at what happened last year.
Georgia defense.
Georgia defense. Yeah. There you have it. They have 1, 2. Oh, this isn't the draft, but there's 3, 4 of the top 32 players overall in McShay's rankings are Georgia defenders. No surprise there, right?
No, not at all. When you recruit at a high level, it reflects with championships and high draft picks.
I'm looking at the draft here and if he snuck anybody else in. Nope,
that's been Georgia in a nutshell the last 5-plus years.
Four of the top 23.
Especially under Smart, they've been recruiting at a high level. They're playing for SEC championships, national titles. They broke through this year, and they always have guys up there in that draft.
Yeah, four of the top 23 picks McShay's mock draft are Georgia defenders. And like I said, that doesn't surprise anybody if you just watch the college football season. And you're right. I know everybody. There's times of the year where the big conversation is, around the Super Bowl. Oh, look at these guys that were no stars or two stars or three stars that are playing in the Super Bowl. That's, you know what? There are guys like that. But if you look throughout the years at the guys that recruit well in college, that play well in college, and then that go on in the NFL, it's a massive difference. It's easy to pick one or two out when it's Aaron Donald or what have you, you know.
Or Cup.
Cup or whatever, and that's fine. Those happen too. It's not an end-all, be-all with these recruiting rankings. But when you look throughout the years at who recruits well and then who plays well, there's a huge correlation to that. Like when we're sitting here 2 years from now and we're lamenting the fact that Jimbo Fisher actually did get it done at Texas A&M and they bucked the trend of their entire existence to play in the playoff or even win a national title, you know what we'll point back to? The recruiting class they just had and the way they're stacking them up now. Georgia is a perfect example. Since Kirby Smart left Alabama to go to take over the head coach of Georgia, they have been recruiting at an Alabama-type level for that shorter period of time. No one's done it like Saban over a decade like he's done it. But Georgia, over those four or five classes, have been right there. And guess what? They won the title. Those things correlate with each other. Mm-hmm. If you want to pick out a person or two, you know, outside of Texas, they correlate. Now, some teams just can't figure out how to develop, and that's on them. But that doesn't mean that what they got. You know, there's always flaws in anything. But if you start looking through the years at who's winning and who's recruiting the best, those teams are the same. Year after year after year.
Yep.
They're the same.
Yep. It's not hard. I mean, it's not hard. It's just not hard. You see what the recruiting happens, and you see how it turns into success.
And you see it turns into success from the recruiting rankings to the college football field and then right here into these mock drafts and what will be the real draft when it comes with first, second-round picks into the NFL. And then we'll get the stat after the draft is over that the Big 12 had 25 players taken. And the SEC had 100. You know, I mean, yeah. And then you go, okay, well, yeah. Now there's more teams, and there's times where you can make the argument that, you know, per capita, like Oklahoma, they've got 11 guys going to the combine. That's second across the country, tied with Alabama. And that's more fuel to the fire of why did Tebow do what he did? Why did he crater the season? Because as far as the NFL goes, talent was on that team at a higher level than it's been in a long time.
Yeah.
Results.
Listen, we don't have enough. It's 10 o'clock. We don't have time to give opinions about Muleshoe and his lack of effort this past season with the talent he had. Clearly, the 11 guys going to the combine.
Real quick, would you draft – McShay's got an offensive lineman going first. Evan Neal, offensive tackle, to Jacksonville from Alabama. You understand the thinking, obviously, with Trevor Lawrence as your franchise quarterback.
Would I draft him?
Would you draft him number one?
If I'm Jacksonville?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a safe pick. You keep your star quarterback they're clearly going to, try to protect this guy and yeah, I mean, they're not giving up on Lawrence, clearly, by trying to find some other skill player. I mean, you want to keep him healthy, keep him upright. That's it's a safe pick, and I'm a safe guy anyway. So, yeah, that's how I would do that.
It's a horrible year for Jacksonville to have the number one pick.
Because there's not a lot.
There's not quarterbacks.
No.
In a perfect world, somebody down here, say the Giants at 5, Carolina at 6, somebody like that, would want that pick so that they could draft it. And then guess what? You might be able to get Evan Neal at 6 or Charles Cross is number 7, offensive tackle, Mississippi State, and then build draft capital throughout the, you know, with not only the haul that you would get from trading that number one pick. Ain't nobody doing that this year.
Mm-mm.
The only way you're getting multiple picks is if you trade Trevor Lawrence, and that's not happening. So it's kind of a tough break. I mean, you'd want to move down, I think, if you're Jacksonville, because I don't think you want to take a tackle number one. But it makes sense for what you've got. But that goes back to the, are you drafting for need or are you drafting the best player available? And the good teams draft the best player available, no matter what they need.
That's true, too.
They just do. Look at Dallas's draft 2 years ago.
Yep.
Everybody wanted to take somebody defensively. CD fell right in their lap. You have to take him. He's the best player on your board. And then, oh, by the way, who'd you get in the third round? You remember who that pick was?
Would that be one Micah Parsons?
No, it was Trayvon Diggs.
Oh, Diggs.
Think that worked out?
Yeah.
By going that way?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So anyway.
I think it all worked out.
Of course it does.
Well, this season.
But anyhow. We'll get back into that more. Some interesting... Lots of defense.
You know, really focus, and we will do this as we get closer to the draft, but what Dallas could do and who could be available for them, it's kind of intriguing to see the possibility, you know, seeing some film. We've had it sent straight to us.
Yeah.
It's kind of intriguing.
David Ojobo is the guy from Michigan in this one. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.